My sister has previously asked me why I'm not a cat person. And look, I'm not against cats. I like cats. I'm just more of a dog person. That right there is why. Because dogs won't drink your blood. Cats are like waiting for you to die so they can eat your face.
That has been disproven.
Okay, I'll cut this.
Everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood boys.
Bollywood boys, some of whom solve crimes, some of whom commit crimes.
And some of whom die.
Yeah, more than I expected.
Yeah, and then also some who, like, don't die. Like, you think they're dead, but they're not dead, but then...
And others who the end of the movie comes and you're like, I'm not 100% sure whether that person's dead. Exactly. They never really said.
Exactly. Yes.
But we'll be talking about all those boys and more and some girls here as we discuss Murder Mubarak.
Yes.
I had a great time with this one.
Yeah, I was wondering. As soon as it started, I was like, oh boy, Kim's doing the recap. And it's one of those... Which I love this in films. I love when they introduce characters with, like, a fun nickname or something and, like, a freeze frame. It's my favorite. But then I'm like, there are, like, 10 characters here.
I'm not joking, it took me between 4 and 5 hours to watch this movie.
Sure, that does not surprise me. I enjoyed myself as well. I think I reached a point at the end where I was kind of like... I'm wondering if maybe they could have narrowed down the cast just a little bit more, because it did feel a little clunky in terms of, like, there are so many people and certain characters, you're like, oh, I know you. I get your whole thing. I understand your motivations. I understand, like, why you're a suspect. And other ones, I'm just like, why were we introduced to you? Who are you?
I agree with that. Yeah, I do. I feel like there were so many people with nicknames that I was like, okay, each of these people is probably going to have, like, equal importance.
Right.
And they did not. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was adapted from a book called Club You to Death. And I do want...
Sorry, I just realized something. Go on.
But I do wonder if... as sometimes happens with adaptations, you know, you can have a cast of like 10 or 12 characters in a book and give them each equal time, but you can't really do that in a movie well. And so I do wonder if they could have taken a little bit more liberty maybe to merge some characters, you know, so that you are dealing with a smaller cast where everyone is getting that screen time. That was like my one criticism.
Yeah.
I thought the acting was superb.
The acting was excellent all around. I just got excited because I didn't realize that it was based on a book, so I appreciate you mentioning that. And something just clicked for me because on IMDb, Anuja Chauhan has a writing credit for this. Yeah. But then it says based on the novel by... So I don't know if she also wrote the screenplay. She wrote The Zoya Factor, the novel The Zoya Factor, which is another... good book that got turned into that got turned into maybe not a great movie, and this I still think is a really fun movie. But I think maybe adaptations of her work maybe haven't always been you know, spot on. Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah I think that's fair. But yeah, I think this was definitely entertaining. And I felt like we were on a roller coaster. There were some twists and turns. I do think there were a few ends not tied up.
I agree. Yeah, there were still some loose ends that didn't really have to do with the crime.
Yeah.
That I then am like, we didn't really need those in the first place. So yeah, that
like this
makes sense with the adaptation.
What was up with the people who were sick? Why was that never discussed?
Oh, yeah. Well, and all the cats, too. Like, why were there so many dead cats in this movie?
And why was only one special? I don't know.
I don't know. And why did he seem to die multiple times?
That's what's so confusing.
Yeah, I did not talk about...
Were we...
I only mentioned the cat once and no other times because I didn't feel the need to talk about all of the times that cats died in this movie.
I think that's okay, yeah. That was upsetting. Yeah.
as you said, excellent performances mm-hmm. all around. We mentioned some of the people we were excited about last week. Of course, Pankaj Tripathi, always.
Oh my God.
He yeah. was just, you said last week that this is the role he was born to play, and I agree.
I stand by what I said now that I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Just like funny and gentle, but smart and strong.
Yeah. I love him so much.
So much.
Just continues to grow.
Yeah. And Sara Ali Khan also gave an excellent performance.
Yeah.
Dimple Kapadia was hilarious. She's like not enough in my notes, but she was hilarious.
She was hilarious, but I was confused because Karisma Kapoor, like mm-hmm. Dimple Kapadia is listed first on IMDb, or I mean before Karisma Kapoor.
Yeah.
In like the stars. And I had thought going into it that Dimple Kapadia would have a bigger part.
I did too.
But it felt like she was there more for comedic relief, which she did a great
job. She was
job.
So good. It was very funny.
Inappropriate, and I loved her. But then Karisma Kapoor really like blew it out of the water with her performance too.
Right.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, I hadn't even registered that you were in this film at first. And you're a pretty major part of it, and you're great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. The IMDb top four is often unreliable. But yeah, Karisma Kapoor was amazing. I enjoyed Sanjay Kapoor's performance as well. And I do need to just talk about Asim Gulati, because I am so in love with him, and I knew from the promotional stuff and the fact that he was not in much of it that he was probably the one who dies.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I had made that guess and then I was correct, but I was glad to see that we did get to see his character in
a little bit
in flashbacks.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. This was, I think, the first thing I've seen with him in it. And
this wouldn't have been what I would show you.
No, I think
like,
that's fair.
Here, see this guy I really like.
I'm not judging his acting ability based on this role because, yeah, he was probably on screen, not dead, for a total of like not even 7 minutes. Like,
but a
minutes.
Very important part of the film.
Yes, very. He's the crux of the film.
Yeah.
But he is like, if you told AI to design a beautiful man, and I say beautiful.
Yeah.
That is what you'd get out of the AI machine.
Yeah, it's kind of absurd.
It's kind of like Uncanny Valley. It's like you look at him and you're like, this can't be a real human though, right?
Right. Yeah. And yeah, which is why I do enjoy watching him act, because when he acts, it kind of takes away from that in a weird way.
Yes.
Like just looking at like pictures of him or just seeing him like not doing much on screen, it is like people aren't that attractive. They
right.
just aren't.
I'm like suspicious of your beauty.
Yeah. Right. Like, are you an alien creature?
Right.
But then like the most of the time the characters that I have seen him play are just like kind of bad but very charming.
I love that.
Guys who
Yeah.
He's just really funny, and I just like the way he moves on screen.
I'm excited to watch more of him, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we've talked about, like, one of the minor characters for several minutes, we like handsome people. What can we say? We like other people, too, but that's
we do. Although, again, he's so handsome that my brain immediately forgot what he looked like. you know, because like I'm like, oh, your character wasn't a big part of this. Like, I didn't really care about you. And while you were on screen, I was like, there's that very handsome man.
Right.
I'd rather look at Pankaj Tripathi. It's so fascinating how the brain works. I mean, also Pankaj Tripathi is a very handsome man too.
He is. Yes.
We've talked about that,
but in a different way than Asim Gulati. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, who plays Kashi?
Vijay Varma plays Akash, and Homi Adajania directed the film.
Yes.
Okay, well, shall we get into our recap here?
Yeah, it's time.
Yeah, it is time. Oh, and I was also going to say the movie was produced by Matic Films, who also did Street and Badia and both of the Love Entrepreneur films.
Thank you. I was watching it and I was like, there has to be a connection to Badia here because, A, there's an actor
the
in
song.
Common. And they play whatever the...
Thumakeshwari.
Yeah. That song. I also love that my brain was like, oh my God, I know that song. Do I know that song? Yeah, I know that song. What's it from? And I was like, oh, I got this. It's Baby. Yeah, of course it
good
is.
Good job. I love Thank when you. That happens.
Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Okay, so. The plot. Movie. Here we go. Yeah. We open at the Royal Deli Club on their Tambola night, which seems to me like it's like bingo. That's what that game is. And a little girl is searching for a cat named Prince Harry. Mm-hmm. As she searches the club, she encounters some of our cast of characters. First, Leo, quote-unquote, lecherous Matthews, who at first I thought was dying.
Oh, you thought he was dying.
Looks like he's, like,
Kim.
Choking.
Oh.
Well, because I was looking, I was only watching with half my attention. I was, like, typing down, right. like, Leo, lecherous Matthews. This guy looks like he's dying. And then, he's on the receiving end of a BJ.
He's experiencing the little death.
Exactly, yes. Well, it's like O face and pain face are the same face. Like, yeah. There's literal science behind that. So I think I can be forgiven for assuming, because again, I was sure Ashim Gulati was the one who was going to die. So I think I just thought it was happening right away.
I was like, I don't know who's dead here. That guy's definitely getting pleasure.
Anyway, so that's Leo. We also meet Yash the junkie Batra and Raja the show-off Singh. The cat, by the way, is under one of the tables in the club, lapping up what appears to be blood from a puddle beside what appears to be a dead body.
Yes.
That's the little girl and the cat and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Dogra family pulls up outside the club, complaining about the upcoming election for club president. And the mother of the family is complaining about her son, who lives in Kolkata, who has been transformed into a leftist, in her opinion, and is now rejecting the symbol of classism and privilege that is the RDC, the Royal Delhi Club.
Mm-hmm.
The Dogra family enters the club, and just as the club's current president calls everyone to gather for a group photo, Akash, the pitiable Dogra, enters. This is the leftist son in question.
Yes. I had not realized that the pitiable was his nomaker.
Yeah, I don't know how great the translation is in some of this. Akash greets his mother coldly, and she berates him for being back in Delhi for several days already without visiting her, and she makes reference to an elusive she. But Akash asserts that this she means nothing to him, and he is in love with his girlfriend back in Kolkata.
Yes.
Next, Shehnaz, the diva, Nuranj, enters, and the whole club stops to watch her. The club president extends his hand for her to shake, and then she first sprays it with disinfectant and then shakes it. Which at first I thought was rude, and then I realized that this guy's real sick. Or just really gross.
Yeah. I just don't
Again,
understand
it doesn't really get
sick,
explored, yeah.
I really thought it was going to, because also...
Were other
woman,
people sick? I just noticed him being germy.
Oh, no. The woman who was pleasuring Leo also had the pink nose, and she literally had to stop midway through and sneeze.
Oh. Huh.
And then he was like, get back to it, lady. I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, so then I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Do we have this creepy, like, manager taking advantage of his female employees that he would have gotten her sick? But nope, that never comes back. So.
Maybe that happens in the book. Who knows?
Maybe.
Anyway, so Leo takes Shehnaz aside and whispers seductively in her ear. The group gathers for the photo, and Shehnaz and Raja fight to be front and center. They are both running in the upcoming election for club president. And as they exchange nasty words, there is a crash as Bambi, the widow, Todi, arrives and knocks over a bunch of dishes or something. I'm not sure what she knocked over.
Yeah.
She and Akash share a charged glance. She is the elusive she that Akash's mother referred to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The camera flashes just as the little girl from earlier notices a foot sticking out from under one of the tables. She lifts the tablecloth to find a man's body and screams. And we get the title card, Murder Mubarak.
Yes.
And now we meet Assistant Commissioner of Police Bhavani Singh as he is struggling to parallel park his car. He does end up bumping into another person's car, but he diffuses the situation by doing something we see him do several times throughout the film, which is telling a seemingly made-up story about Padam that garners sympathy.
Yes. He's a very good orator.
He is, yes.
Yes. And I love Potom.
Yeah, too. Me too. Yeah.
Like, they're a really good pair, like, crime-fighting duo. I would happily see other films starring
yeah,
them.
This could be a franchise, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, these two, they get called to go and investigate a death at the Royal Delhi Club. When they arrive, the club's president shows them around and explains that the club is very top-notch and exclusive, and it used to be just for the British, but now mm-hmm. there is a 20-year waitlist for Delhi's elite to join.
Yeah.
As they pass an area that is restricted to members only and forbids staff and guards from entering, Bhavani tells the president that it's really something to be proud of.
Yeah, I do like all of the, like, pointed...
Yes.
You know, lingering on these things that, like, the president is so proud of. And then Bhavani is just like, okay. Just taking everything in.
The club president leads Bhavani and Potom not to the event space where we thought we had seen a dead body the night before, mm-hmm. but to the club gym where Leo Matthews is lying dead with a barbell crushing his windpipe.
Yeah. I thought that this was a second murder.
I did too. I think they wanted us to. The president is sure that this was an accidental death, but Bhavani asks to see the CCTV footage. Mm-hmm. And it shows one of the club's trainers putting Leo's protein shake in the fridge, and then some balloons magically rise up and block the cameras before the death occurs.
Yes.
The president cannot tell which of the trainers this is who has put the protein shake, which also then was found by Leo's body. He doesn't know who this is because there are two trainers that he just simply cannot tell apart. They look the same in
his
eyes.
They look very different.
Yeah. More on that later.
Yeah. Yep.
Bhavani tells the president that all of the evidence, as well as a rumbling in his stomach, points to this being a murder. That rumbling being his intuition and not
yes.
That he ate something questionable.
Not tummy troubles.
Not tummy troubles, no. Just a troubling tummy.
Yes.
Bhavani starts his investigation by interviewing the three women who found the body. Bambi, Roshni, the bullshitter, Batra, who is Yash the junkie's mother.
Yep.
And then Cookie Cocktail Katoch. Who we never see without her preferred cocktail of beetroot juice and just a dash of tequila.
Yeah, she's great. Everyone needs just, like, that kooky rich lady.
She's such a weird person.
And I love it. And it also, it gives some, like, I know you haven't watched White Lotus, but very similar of, like, who could it have been who caused this death of this yeah. person? And then there's just a kooky rich lady who's just kind of weird and interesting and no one really knows what to do with. I love it. It's great.
That's great. Yeah. It's also, like, I kept thinking of Knives Out.
Yes,
watching this. Yeah. It's the same kind of vibe. I enjoy this genre, whatever country it happens
yeah,
to come
like,
out of.
Yeah, like, just, like, kind of, like, dark murder whodunit, but also comedy.
But also funny, yeah, yeah. And, like, low stakes. It's not like you're gonna watch it and feel troubled
right,
by the fact
right.
that people died.
Just kind of quirky. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so the three women find Leo when they arrive for their morning Zumba class, and after Cookie takes the opportunity to engage in some light necrophilia, they decide yeah. to call the police.
Well, and what confuses me is that, did she think he wasn't dead? Like, she seems surprised
yeah.
that he's dead.
I honestly couldn't tell if she was pretending to be surprised that he was dead, and she did walk in and think, like, oh my god, he's dead, I'm gonna take this opportunity to touch his thighs, or if she was like, oh, Leo is just laying there.
Maybe he's just sleeping.
Maybe he's just sleeping with this barbell on his neck. I'll just touch him for a second. Questionable behavior from Cookie.
It's very questionable, and I did get a little bit nervous. I was like, these shorts are already riding up. Like, let's not,
I know,
not violate this corpse or this sleeping man, whichever may be.
We don't need that. Nobody needs it. Nobody wants it.
And she didn't, so...
And she did. She just the thigh. Just the thigh.
She just felt him up a bit. It's fine.
It's not fine, friends, but...
No.
It's... Yeah, in this context, it's very silly. So in telling this story, Roshni makes reference to another body found the night before, and Bhavani asks for clarification. Mm-hmm. Roshni points to one of the staff, Guppy Ram, who is very much alive, and he had fallen asleep under a table the night before, and the blood was actually strawberry sauce.
Yeah.
So we do just so far have the one death that we know about.
Just the one. Yes.
The one body. Bhavani asks for details about the Tambula night, the night before, and it turns out Leo was hosting the game, and he then ended up getting into a fight with Raja because Raja, like, had won, but another man won, and Raja accused that guy of cheating. And the whole thing just, it devolved into a food/fist fight, in the midst of which Bambi drags Guppy Ram out onto the dance floor and starts to dance with him.
Yes.
Bhavani then asks for Akash to come to the club for questioning because he had stepped in before the fight with Leo and Raja, claiming that he was Leo's lawyer. He tells Bhavani that he is not, in fact, Leo's lawyer, and that he had only met him once before when Akash was working on a case where some kids at a local orphanage got involved in some drug stuff, and the warden of the orphanage actually got wrongfully arrested. So this is somehow Leo was connected to all of that going on.
Yes.
After he has finished questioning Akash, Bhavani notices Yash flirting with Bambi and Akash creepily watching from behind a tree.
As you do.
So there's something going on there, too.
Dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Taking it all in. Yes, dynamics, vibes. Bhavani next interviews the two trainers, Taeju and Tinsook, the quote-unquote unlikely lookalikes, who the club president couldn't tell apart. These two men could not look less alike.
I agree, yeah.
I suppose if one of them had different colored hair, but otherwise, look absolutely nothing alike.
Yep, yeah. But also really happy to see that Tinsook, right, was played by the same actor who was in Bedia. I can't remember his character's name in Bedia.
Yes, the actor Paulin Kabak.
Yes. So I was so happy to see him because when we watched Bedia in October, both of us, I feel like, were like, man, I really like him. I'd like to see him in some other stuff. And here he is.
And here he is. Yes.
Ask I like and the... ye shall receive.
And I like, he's in another Matic film. So it's like maybe they're they're like, we like this guy. We're going to keep bringing him out, bringing him in for stuff. It's fun.
Yeah. He was fun to see.
So it turns out that Taeju, the other trainer, he is the one who was putting Leo's protein shake into the fridge. And then we also find out that it was his girlfriend who was giving Leo the BJ at the start of the film.
Yes.
So this could be our murderer. You know, he's got motive, means, and opportunity. But he's not.
No. That'd be too easy. Movie over.
That'd be way too easy. Bhavani interviews more of the staff, including Ganga, the nightmare girl, who will later turn out to be important, which is why I bring her up now.
Yeah.
And Guppy Ram, who has dementia, but you can definitely tell there's something going on. He knows something. He's keeping something a secret. He's got that vibe.
Yeah. But I do like his characterization of like, you can't trust what he says, but some of the things he says are thought provoking. Yes. But then it's like, what's nonsense? What's not?
Was I always like a character like that. Meaningful?
Yeah.
Yes. That is very fun. And Bhavani takes it all seriously, which is important.
Yeah.
We then see a scene with Akash and Bambi, and these two have known each other since childhood, and they were childhood sweethearts, but Bambi married another man, who died tragically in a bus accident on the night of their anniversary 3 years earlier.
Yeah, that's sad.
That's real rough, yeah. We go back to the investigation, and Bhavani and Padam go to Leo's apartment, and it is a mess. And the landlady tells them that it was not a mess when she saw it that morning. Mm-hmm. There are so many bras.
Yeah.
I really thought that maybe he was going to turn out to, like, do drag.
Oh, yeah. That would make a lot more sense.
He has so many bras. Some of these must be his bras. But
because
no.
Well, because speaking as a woman, generally speaking, you're not gonna like forget your bra
unless someone steals it and they're like, "It's I don't know, you didn't wear it."
Yeah, unless it's nowhere missing. To be found.
You're too drunk. You stumble home and you don't realize that you lost it until you get home.
Yeah, there has to be some nefarious intent behind that many bras.
Absolutely. A suspicious quantity of bras in
Leo's
apartment.
There's gonna maybe be like one woman who will be like a little cheeky, like, keep it. But yeah. Bras are expensive, so
they are. And those all look like nice, like underwire yep. lace bras. Yeah. Like, yeah, those are not
I'm not leaving that behind.
Those bras mean business. In addition to all the bras, there's also a lot of women's jewelry. And so Cleo was taking these things from these women. This is not
these are trophies.
He was not sleeping with just a series of careless women who left things at his apartment.
Yeah.
His landlady says that his tablet is missing. So someone must have, like, broken in and ransacked the apartment and taken it.
Is it bad that when they were talking about his tablet and they were like, he's a filmmaker, I was like, I bet he's a filmmaker.
No, because, again, Leo Lecherous Matthews, you're going to assume what you're going to assume about this man.
Yeah, and there's kind of these vibes coming from the landlady that, like,
oh, she's flirting with everyone. Yeah, she's... And she also clearly had slept with him because he's got her stuff in there.
Right, and, like, that's fine, but it's also kind of like, is she, like, a pimp? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
And she's welcome to do whatever she wants to do as long as everyone's consenting and no one's being exploited.
That could be a whole story, yeah.
Yeah.
This is also where Bhavani and Padam have a moment where Padam asks him why he never wears his uniform, and Bhavani says that it is a barrier between him and the people who he is trying to get information from. And he also says that if he can lift that barrier, they're more likely to share secrets with him, more so than if he were to use violence.
I really like that.
I like that a lot too. I like that we're getting an example of a good-hearted cop who does not need to cause physical harm in order to get what he needs to do his job.
Mm-hmm. He's just so trusting. I mean, I would tell Pankaj Tripathi all of my secrets.
I would. His eyes are so gentle.
Yeah, like, in any of his iterations, even the creepy brother from Muna Michael, I feel like, could get some secrets out of me.
But he would use them for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then Bambi goes to see Akash again, and she reveals that Leo was blackmailing her. And the reason for this is because she is a kleptomaniac. She just can't help herself from grabbing stuff, stealing it, even totally random stuff that she would never have a purpose for. She even stole Bhavani's reading glasses, which is mean.
Yeah, because he's like, I can't see without those.
It's a problem. So they go to tell Bhavani this, and Bambi explains that she wouldn't actually give the money to Leo, but she would instead make a donation to the local orphanage, the same orphanage that Akash had worked with on a case a few years ago.
Yes.
So Bhavani and Bambi and Padam go to the orphanage, and they learn that Leo grew up there. Yeah. And the warden, Rakesh, says that he and Leo were friends growing up in the orphanage together, and Leo used to intentionally misbehave so that he wouldn't get adopted and he could stay with Rakesh, who has a limp. And so he, therefore, never got adopted.
This is when I started to be like, okay, maybe I like Leo a little bit.
I know, me too! Because Rakesh says that Leo was like a modern-day Robin Hood. And I made a note, I was like, I would like to see this movie.
Yeah, seriously.
I'd like to see this movie from Leo's perspective, but he doesn't die and maybe he meets a nice girl. I don't know.
Maid Marian. Yes.
Loxley and Miguel. Bambi, again, is with them. She's just along for the ride with this investigation now. She's a part of the team. And she's looking over the list of donors to the orphanage and notes several club members are on the list. And everyone surmises that these people were likely also then being blackmailed by Leo. And so Bhavani starts bringing in club members for questioning regarding the blackmailing. And he starts with Roshni. And she says that she made the donation willingly, but in a flashback, we see that she definitely did not.
Yep.
During the interrogation, Guppy Ram comes in and he is troubled, and Bambi comforts him. And Roshni shares her opinion that poor people should die young, because growing old is so hard for them.
Yeah, what a rich person thing to say. No. Like, what?
It's like, why not give them better lives? Like, improve their quality of life?
Or, yeah, like, God.
No, just die before there's a problem.
Great.
So Bhavani in this moment gets a call from the forensics team, and we don't hear the other side of this call, but he mentions Pinko. And the word Pinko piques both Bambi and Roshni's interest.
Yes.
Roshni ends up telling Bhavani that she thinks Raja killed Leo, and that Leo was probably blackmailing Raja because he is sleeping with Ganga, who again is the nightmare girl. Bambi says that this isn't fair and that Ganga used to work for her, but she had an abusive husband who abandoned her, and so Bambi helped her get a job at the club.
Yes.
Just as Roshni is assuring Bhavani that Raja is the most likely murderer, he has the best motive, Raja enters the room because he is the next person who has been called in for interrogation.
Yeah.
Roshni leaves a little awkwardly, and Bhavani starts questioning Raja, who insists on being called my lord, because he is descended from royalty.
Yeah. And he also is just, like, throwing 20 rupee notes at
all
the staff.
Yeah, there were a lot of things about his character that when you find out at the end what his situation is, it's like, oh, it all makes sense now.
It does. I really liked his character arc. And, like, learning the things we learn about him at the times that we learn them.
Yes.
Very interesting journey. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. So he, in his interrogation, talks about his frustration with Shehnaz, who is his rival for club president, and his anger that she wants to build bathrooms for female staff members in the gardens that he has dedicated to his deceased wife. Now... I don't know, like, why you would have a problem with women being able to use the bathroom while they're at work, but Raja does, if it means that he can't look at this garden for his wife.
Yeah, well, and I'm just like, why aren't there already, whatever those facilities are, like, I don't know if it goes beyond a bathroom to, like, something else. If it's just a bathroom, that feels like it's a problem in that there should already have been bathrooms.
Right. Well, I have to assume that it was, like, these buildings were built in a time when staff wouldn't have been women. Right. And so then when they hired women, they just didn't give them a place to use the bathroom.
Very possible.
Yeah, but here we are. He then tells Bhavani that he is wasting his time interviewing him because no one would have the guts to blackmail him. And we then immediately cut to a flashback of Leo blackmailing him. Raja then calls Bhavani inspector, and Bhavani corrects him. It's assistant commissioner of police. And then he tells him that he can leave. And I just love that moment because Raja's, like, whole thing through this is, like, masculinity. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a man. And Bhavani then just demonstrates, like, the absolute perfect example of non-toxic masculinity of, like, no, I am proud of my achievements.
Yeah.
You will give me the respect that I deserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
You can't really argue with someone who puts you in your place in that manner.
I know. Yeah.
Like, in a non-threatening, like, I can't even prove that you're doing something right now, but you're definitely doing something right now.
Right.
Yeah. I love it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Raja finally says that he is a real man, and real men look their enemies in the eye when they kill them. Unlike... dot, dot, dot. And then we cut to Shehnaz in a bed covered in blood, sitting next to a severed head.
Yeah.
Cool.
I do like these moments where the movie is like, haha, and then you're like, whoa, what? And then it explains it. I like those little, like, I don't know what to call them, like, drops, like on a roller coaster, like a tiny little drop.
Yeah.
Like, but no.
Oh my god, that's a severed head, but then...
Yes.
But don't worry, because the severed head is not severed, it is an actual head, actual man's actual head, still attached to his body. This is her film set, because she's an actress. And so she and Bhavani chat, and he asks why she wants to be club president, and she says that it's not a man's world anymore, so she wants to have power as a woman. Good for her.
Yeah.
When they ask about her name being on the donor list for the orphanage, she says that she has been donating there for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We then cut to a flashback where Shehnaz is rummaging through Leo's apartment for files, and he stops her and tells her to confess something to everyone, but Shehnaz says that she can't for the sake of her daughters.
Yeah.
After this, Bhavani goes to chat with forensics, and they share that Leo was poisoned with an opioid called Pinko, which would have weakened him immediately after hitting his system, so that's why he died while he was trying to do some bench presses.
Mm-hmm.
Should always have a spotter, guys.
Exactly! I was just thinking that. I was like, he's a personal trainer. He should know that.
Yeah, but nope. So, Bambi, who she had heard about the Panko on the phone earlier. She goes to tell Akash about this, and Akash is like, oh, I know about this stuff, and I know where we can find out more. So the two of them go to a club where they talk to a drug dealer, and this drug dealer mentions that one of his guys used to deal at the club, but he went missing 3 years ago. This man is AK. This is Ganga's husband who disappeared after abusing her.
There's so many threads here, you know?
A lot of threads. Lot of threads. Bambi and Akash then see Yash talking to the dealer who they learned this information from, and so they go to Yash's house, and Bambi breaks in and finds Panko in one of Yash's drawers. Mm-hmm. Yash is supposedly sober, but we have seen him do drugs multiple times throughout the movie already.
Yeah.
I also enjoy this scene because Akash and Bambi have gotten high before going to do this investigation, yes. And it's very silly, and I enjoyed it.
Because it was, like, Bambi's idea, just to be like, it's for, like, science,
let's
for
do the some investigation. Drugs.
Yeah. It's like, maybe you shouldn't do that right before you're going to break into someone's home.
No, yeah, and drive around, because Akash then also drives Bambi home. Yeah. But so now it's time for Leo's funeral. And Bambi is looking through the photos that she took while she was at Yasha's house, and one of them has AK in the photo. And so she and Akash assume that AK was Yasha's drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Shehnaz and Bhavani sit next to each other at the funeral, and she asks Bhavani if he still suspects her. And he says yes. And she asks if he suspects Raja as well. And Bhavani implies that he does not. And then he says straight up, because, you know, I think he would have killed someone like a man and looked his enemy in the eyes. And he's clearly being sarcastic with that. But Shehnaz, she says that the world has carried the weight of masculinity for too long. And then she says that she would like to see Raja deliver a baby after 14 hours of labor in a burning tenement house with sword-wielding rioters on his doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
Preach.
Yeah, but also, whoa.
Also, whoa, has she been through some stuff?
Right, I was glad that that came back because I was like, oh, okay, we're not, okie dokie, we're not going to talk about it. I also think it's cute that, like, Bhavani at least appears to have a little bit of a crush on her.
Aw.
It's just...
I love that.
Yeah. It seemed like when they go on set, he's a little bit, like, starstruck by her.
Smitten. Yeah.
And then sitting next to her, he's just like, hi. Like, he just gets a different vibe around her.
Aw, that's really sweet.
And I like when she asks him if he still suspects her, he was like, well, Potom says that we have to, so...
Right, yeah.
It's like, I'm not choosing to think of you as a suspect.
But Potom here, he's in charge.
And then I started to get really worried that I was like, I like this whatever's happening here, and I really hope she's not the murderer because I don't... I want this to flourish. I'm rooting for this relationship.
Except that Bhavani has Shalini, who he loves in Lucknow, so...
Oh, right. I guess that's true.
But that's okay. You can still have a crush on a pretty actress. I really like the moment on the set where she, like, steps forward and then she takes a step back so she can have her hair blown by the fan.
Yes. Yeah.
She's like, ooh, I missed my mark.
Oh, that's always good. That's why we all need wind machines.
We do, yes. Just on us all the time. Yep. You never know when it might come in handy.
You just carry around a little handheld, like,
just
fan. That's good.
The next day at the club, Bhavani asks Guppy Ram why he wasn't at Leo's funeral, and Guppy Ram says that Leo's sins finally caught up to him, just like the other guy.
Right.
And before he can explain further, Guppy Ram slips out of lucidity and continues overwatering the garden dedicated to Raja's deceased wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, stuff's happening there. Then everyone gathers at the club for an election event, and in the middle of the festivities, Yash yells at Guppy Ram, who gets very upset. And so we see Bambi go to comfort him, and he says cryptically, if she wins, it's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's also there. Bambi then hears someone lurking outside and watching them, and she goes out to investigate and sees a burning cigarette on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to report all of this to Akash, but Akash just starts making out with her.
Yeah, which feels very out of character for him.
It really did, yeah, because he's got this girlfriend who he apparently really likes, but he doesn't. But that's his story.
It's his girlfriend who lives in Canada. Yeah,
exactly, yes, we've all got one. But yeah, so they make out, they hook up in the pool house. Good for them. Back at the celebrations, Bhavani looks out over the crowd and speculates that one of them must be patting themselves on the back for getting away with murder, saying to themselves, "Murder, Mubarak."
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a gunshot. And everyone runs to see where it came from. And they find Akash and Yash fighting, and Yash threatening to sue Akash. I'm not totally sure what was happening in that moment, but that's what we see.
Yeah.
Some of the dynamics with Yash, I didn't really fully grasp some of the stuff with him and with AK and, yeah, how they all come together.
Yeah, like Yash and Akash were friends, like at the pool, it seemed like they were happy to see each other.
Yeah, I think that's the area for me that didn't get kind of fleshed out enough was that little thing with Yash and AK and the drugs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I could have understood that a little bit better. But behind them, we see that Guppy Rum has shot himself.
Yeah.
So now Bhavani is conducting interrogations about this most recent death at the club. Akash tells Bhavani that Yash isn't sober, as his family has been claiming. Roshni admits to this and says that Yash had just gotten a job in America, and so that's why Leo was blackmailing them, because he was going to tell the employers that Yash was a drug addict and still using. Bambi reveals that AK was selling Yash drugs before his disappearance, which then brings the questioning back around to Ganga and Raja, who are both denying that they have had an affair or that either of them had any involvement in AK's disappearance.
Yeah.
So a lot of pieces, a lot of puzzle pieces on
the
table.
I was just thinking that, and I'm still not 100% clear on some things, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Akash then sees pictures from Leo's apartment, and he realizes that one of Bambi's earrings is in Leo's extensive jewelry collection. Mm-hmm. So he confronts Bambi, and she confesses to having slept with Leo for comfort after her husband's death. And Akash gets unreasonably jealous about this, I feel. This man's dead.
Yeah, like, he's not a threat to you anymore, bro.
He's really not.
Yeah.
Bhavani then has a light bulb moment relating to Guppy Rum and the overwatering of the garden. Mm. The next day, they dig up the garden and they find a skeleton.
Yep.
Guppy Rum was watering the garden with a mixture of vinegar and coffee to make an acid that would decompose the body very rapidly. Suspecting that this was why Raja didn't want the garden dug up, they interrogate Ganga to find out more about this supposed affair. Bambi is with Ganga while she's getting interrogated, offering her comfort, but she stops the moment that Ganga mentions that the last time she saw her husband, AK, was at the night of Bambi's anniversary party.
Mm-hmm.
This then prompts Bambi to go and look at the CCTV footage from that night, and she sees a video of, I think, Raja and Ganga fighting with AK. Also, Guppy Rum is in the video, and then after they all leave, Akash arrives and goes after them.
Right.
And so Bambi deletes this video, I think thinking that Akash had something to do with the death. Well, that's what we're supposed to think she's thinking, and she deletes the video.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Again, this whole piece of it didn't latch on quite as well as I would have hoped.
Yeah. And can I also just rewind just a little bit back to the beetroot situation? Because Cookie is there, and she is horrified to learn that there was a dead body.
And she's like, we're all cannibals.
Yeah, she's like, I've been eating these beetroots for, like, ever.
Yeah, that'd be really
little
upsetting.
Cocktail, she's just pouring it out.
But so the forensics team learns that the skeleton that they found belonged to a man between the ages of 25 and 30 who died from blunt force trauma, and they find little bits of some kind of blue substance in the skeleton's eye socket.
Mm-hmm.
Bhavani goes to talk to Raja to find out again more about his potential involvement in who they think is AK's death.
Yeah.
That's who they think the skeleton is. But he finds Raja living in his mansion, which is basically in ruins. He's there by himself. He's ironing his clothes. He has nothing. He just lives in this open, empty space.
That made me really sad, actually. Like,
It makes me sad too.
I know that there's conflicting feelings there, but just to be this man who's like, the only thing you have is to cling to a title that's been passed down to you. And so you just will literally do anything to continue holding up this image. Yeah.
Right. Ugh. I think it's just proof that the whole kind of concept of that and value coming from that really harms everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone who's involved. So this at first is what seems to be the reason that Leo was blackmailing Raja, because he has no money.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also transpires that Raja was in fact having an affair, not with Ganga, but with Tinsook, the trainer. And Tinsook is Raja's alibi, but he doesn't want to share this publicly because he doesn't want to out Tinsook or himself.
Right.
And so Bhavani has no choice but to arrest Raja as the lead suspect in this murder case.
Yeah.
But then he sees at Raja's house a bust with blue stones embedded in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had seen that Cookie makes these very ugly busts of people. And so Bhavani recognizes her handiwork and he goes to ask her about this one with these blue stones. And she says that she made two, the one at Raja's house, and then the second one she gave to the Dogras.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the police learn that AK is alive. I think he was watching the news and he saw Raja get arrested for his presumed murder, and I think he comes forward. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So AK is alive.
Surprise!
His skeleton is still inside his body. And they question him, and he reveals that he went into hiding because Akash was threatening him because of all the drug stuff that he was doing with these orphans.
Mm-hmm.
We then see Akash saying goodbye to Bambi at the poolside, the place where their love story began.
Yeah.
Because he's going to go back to Calcutta. And so they're saying their goodbyes, and they both get a phone call at the same time. Akash's phone call is from Rakesh, the warden at the orphanage.
Yeah.
And he tells him that he has found Leo's red tablet. And this has all of the details about all of the blackmailing. And Akash is like, don't tell anybody, don't go anywhere, I'll be right there. And we at this point think that Akash is the murderer, so you're like, uh-oh, Rakesh, oh no.
Yeah.
Bambi's phone call is from Bhavani telling her that the skeleton actually belongs to her husband.
Yeah.
Which is a real rough thing to find out. And now they are looking for Akash as the lead suspect in the killing of her husband.
Yeah, and at this point, too, you're like, oh my god, Bambi's in danger.
Yeah, everyone's in danger, and Akash is the villain.
Who knew?
But Bambi denies that she is with Akash. She's like, I haven't seen him. Bhavani asks the Dogras what happened to the bust that Cookie had given them. And the mom says, oh, well, it went missing a few years ago. We don't know what happened to that. But Grandma, this is another thing that was like Knives Out. Grandma's got some insider knowledge.
Yeah.
We don't find out what that is at this point, but we see her flag Bhavani down.
Yes.
We then also see Rakesh watching the videos on Leo's tablet, and then suddenly the door to his room bursts open. And then we also see Akash opening a door, but it's a different door!
There was a lot happening.
There was a lot happening. I liked this moment where I was like, oh my gosh, he's coming! But no.
It wasn't him.
Akash walks through a different door. Shehnaz walks through the door to talk to Rakesh. And you're like, well, why is she here talking to Rakesh?
Because also she's just been like, kind of like, we've been seeing scenes of her just being like,
yeah, she has sneaky. Been kind of watching Bhavani and Padam, like she's doing stuff.
What's her deal?
All of this happens, this montage of things happening, and then the last thing that's happening during all of this is Roshni finds Yash nearly drowned in the bathtub with a suicide note.
Yeah, this felt like it came out of nowhere.
I know, again, because this storyline really, wasn't everything that it could have been. But now it is time for the breakdown. Everyone gathers at the Royal Delhi Club at Bhavani's invitation, where he greets them wearing his uniform.
Mm-hmm, that's a very distinct change, yeah.
Yes. He starts by telling another of his stories about Padam, and the moral of this story is that everyone is an equal. So he starts by confronting Shehnaz. her story about giving birth during the 1992 Mumbai riots doesn't match to either of her daughter's ages. Mm-hmm. And so she confesses that Leah was blackmailing her because Rakesh is her son.
Yeah.
Who was given up to an orphanage, and she was only 16 when she had him. So very tragic. But they hug, and Bhavani nods approvingly. Their story has a happy ending.
Yeah.
Bhavani next turns to Raja, but he says simply that Raja's reason for being blackmailed is his personal matter. And Raja, who is sitting next to Tinsook, breathes a sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
Bhavani then turns to Roshni and says Yash's suicide note was an apology to Bambi. He was also stalking Bambi, which we had seen several times throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And so he clearly had a very strong motive for killing Bambi's husband. Roshni protests to this, and she threatens Bhavani if he goes anywhere near her son, who is currently dying in the ICU. He's not doing great. He's in the ICU.
Yeah, he's in a coma.
Yeah. Bhavani says Yash wasn't the killer. The CCTV footage from the night of the anniversary party, which was also the night of Bambi's husband's disappearance, was deleted, but Leo had the footage on his tablet from another angle.
Mm-hmm.
That footage shows Akash's arrival at the party, but Akash claims that he just went there to talk to Bambi, and when she didn't answer the door, he just left. Bambi starts getting upset, and she starts asking Bhavani about other evidence that Bhavani is not acknowledging in this wrap-up, and Bhavani's like, well, it doesn't matter, like, Akash committed both murders with Guppy Ram's help,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's the killer, sorry. As the cops take Akash away in cuffs, Padam congratulates Bhavani for performing a miracle. But Bhavani says there's still one more kink to be worked out.
Yes.
And then Bambi comes forward and he smiles.
I had kind of been hoping the entire time. I was like, oh, I kind of hope it was her.
Really?
But then I did fall into the trap of being like, oh no, it was Akash.
Yeah.
And so
I did too.
Yeah, and even at this point, I was like, something's going to come back with this weird cold that's going around.
Right.
But no.
Well, and I had suspected her when she was, like, following the case around so much. But then it was, like, right before this, because Bhavani has, like, given people handkerchiefs.
Right.
And then she's crying and he doesn't give her one. And I was like, oh, he's giving them handkerchiefs to collect evidence. I was thinking of Todd.
I was also thinking about that. Yeah.
But he doesn't give it to her because he doesn't suspect her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's interesting. And I trust him. But nope, I don't know what that was.
I was also thinking that we were going to get like the handkerchief thing as evidence and see it. And maybe that was like a deleted scene or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to buy the DVD. In a voiceover, we hear Bambi say that she loves the Royal Delhi Club. It's both her home and her prison. She married her husband to maintain an image of perfection, but then she found out that he was the one having an affair with Ganga.
Mm-hmm.
He tells Bambi that he wants to leave her for Ganga, and Bambi is only concerned about maintaining the image of a perfect marriage.
Yeah.
As he tells her that the divorce papers are almost ready, she hits him over the head with Cookie's bust with the blue stones.
Yeah.
So that was the murder weapon. Bambi says Guppy Ram loved her like a daughter, so he happily helped her to cover up the murder, but then Leo got him drunk and he blabbed about the body. So this is what she was being blackmailed about, not the stealing things.
Yeah.
Bambi says that once you've killed someone, murder becomes a part of your list of solutions.
I could see that.
Yeah, me too. She killed everyone. She even manipulated Guppy Ram into shooting himself, and she had to kill Yash because she'd planted Pinko in his house when she broke in and was pretending that she had found it there, and then I guess he found out about it. Again,
right.
Not clear what happened there to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it again someday and it'll all click, but
I missed it, and yeah. I wasn't taking notes. I was just, like, in it. But I also, could have been distracted. Who knows?
We then learn that the Dogra grandmother, the revelation that she told to Bhavani was that she had re-gifted the bust to Bambi for her anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Bhavani tells Padam that he had always suspected Bambi because of how closely she was following the case, but he didn't have enough evidence against her. but he had an ace up his sleeve in the form of Akash and Bambi's love for him.
Yeah.
He says that love is the world's most complicated riddle.
Yeah.
And we then see Akash visit Bambi in prison, and Bambi says, again, in this kind of continued voiceover, that she's convinced that Akash will be her lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Later, Bhavani warns Akash not to take Bambi's case and tells him that he should just forget about all this and go home to his girlfriend in Calcutta. He then asks Akash if that girlfriend is real. Uh-huh. And Akash does not answer.
Nope.
Finally, Bhavani drives Padam to get some snacks and, while attempting to parallel park, knocks over a whole row of motorbikes. As Padam holds back an angry crowd, Bhavani turns to the camera and starts to tell the audience a story about Padam. And then the credits roll.
And we're back where we started. I enjoyed it. Like, it is an enjoyable thing to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish that they'd maybe cut out a few parts of the plot just to make what remained make more sense and be more clear.
Yes, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think if they had, because so much of it was so well fleshed out, like you said, that I think if they had said, this is the bar that we're going to meet to have the story continue to be in the film version.
Yeah.
And they had cut out the rest of it, that they didn't have time to give that depth, it would have been like a perfect movie.
Right. Yeah. I do really like at one point, Bhavani has a line where he says something about how like the good in people will emerge. I forget what he said, but it was a good line. And it's when Bambi's confessing that she did the murder, because he set her up for that. But the only thing that would have convinced her to do that is blaming it on Akash. And I wish I could remember what that line is, because it was good. Yeah. It was like an observation of like human nature.
Yeah, and, you know, that's reminding me that there were several moments throughout the film where Bhavani has a really, like, humanitarian, that's not the right term, but he has a very, like, he sees killers and criminals as humans.
Yeah.
And not as killers and criminals first, and so, like, people will make jokes about, like, oh, we could be criminals, we could be killers, and he's like, they're just people, so, like, yeah, because you're people.
Yeah.
I think that he has a very, like, healthy and caring perspective towards the people that it's his job to, you know, make sure see justice.
Yeah.
Which you would hope would be the case for everyone who is in that line of work.
You would. I like his character, I like how he played it. I enjoyed the film. Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. Because
you don't need to decide now.
I don't need to decide now, but it was very enjoyable. And again, the acting, I was just so impressed by. There was not a heavy lift necessarily in terms of acting, but I do think Sarah Ali Khan had some intense moments, and also just her whole thing was so great. And then Karisma Kapoor. Like, they were my two standout stars of the film.
Yeah, they did great. And I think there's something really fun about doing an ensemble film like this, where you can get a ton of big names to be in it and not have to make a huge commitment and come in and just give their A game, like, deliver the best of the best. And they probably each had, like, just a handful of, like, weeks that they were actually on set.
Right.
So I think that's a good way to do it. And then you get, like, one star who's there for the whole thing, and I think that's one of the things that makes this new genre so interesting and fun.
I agree. That's a really fun component of it. Yeah. Research.
Yeah.
So I decided to look into clubs in India.
Fun.
Because I was just like, they have to be a legacy of British colonialism.
Yep.
and they are. So I read this article called Class, Race, and the Colonial Clubs of India, written by David Gilmore in Open magazine. So
thanks, Dave.
Yeah, it was a quick read. So
yeah,
I originally was calling them country clubs, but apparently country clubs are just a specific type of club. So these are just genuinely called clubs. Which makes sense, because it was always like the gentleman's club or the ladies' club or whatever in London. But like, we only have country clubs in the States, so.
So we got a lot of country over here.
Yeah, yeah. Or I guess like shooting clubs, like, you know. Anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah. But clubs became commonplace in India in 1870. And so over the next decade, by 1880, most cities in India had one where people could congregate for, quote, leisure, exercise, and conversation. And these clubs often sprang up because of a lack of meeting places, such as large hotels or coffee houses. Important to note that the original clubs were created by and for white British men. That does not continue to always be the case, but that is like fundamentally what they were started
by.
That's
where they started. Yeah.
Yes. And clubs were originally meant as places for men to gather, but some developed more facilities like pools and like tracks, like athletic facilities and things like that, and became more friendly toward wives and children as well. So then there were women's lounges and there were playgrounds. Okay. So it became kind of like a place for the whole white British family to enjoy.
Right.
Yeah. And the reasoning behind establishing these clubs was not to provide fancy facilities for privileged upper class people, but to encourage people to stick to their own social or ethnic group rather than trying to move into a different group.
Because this getting to know the population you're living among is, that's not what we want.
Right, right. And to that end, that's when you see other types of clubs popping up that are not just for white British people, but are for other groups. So there was a railway men club where all the railway men could go to their club that wasn't the white British club. And yeah. There was like an Anglo-Indian club. So mm-hmm. never the twain shall meet. People went to their own club with their own yep. quote-unquote people. A good example of this is in 1941, the town of Digboy had four different clubs for the employees of the Assam Oil Company, which, you know, was one big company in this town. There was one club for the British, one club for the Indians, one club for the Anglo-Indians, and then there was a sports club. Which was for anyone as long as you liked sports.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a fun place.
Yeah. But it's just like, you couldn't just have one meeting place. No, you have to have right. four. I guess you could have gotten three.
I just want to make sure it's clear that I meant specifically the sports club yes. is a fun place. <I know. laughs> All of the segregated clubs sound a lot less fun.
Yeah. No, thank you. One Indian judge observed at the time that people made a lot of effort to get into a different club than the one that was made for them or that they were born into, while the people of the desired club made a lot of effort to keep those people out.
Yeah, I think of the famous sign that says no dogs or Indians yeah. allowed. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, there was an article that called attention to that as well. Mm-hmm. In a slightly more childish vein, my brain went to the Dr. Seuss book with the, they're not Sneeds, but yeah, they might be Sneeds. There's like a Dr. Seuss book where there's these people and they're living really happily, but then there's a machine where everyone can get like a star on their belly. And then it oh. becomes like a, who has a star, who doesn't? Well, the ones with the stars are better. And it's just the classic tale of the haves versus the have-nots. And everyone wants yeah. what is quote unquote above what they already have. And it's all just a hamster wheel.
Right. Yeah. They're all constructs. Everything
right.
is
just, it only has value because we give
we
it value.
We just made it all up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And clubs had a very strict membership application process where people had to have members within the club nominate and then second their membership. And then the club committee had to vote. And this is intense in itself. But club committees not only had to be careful about like, okay, do we let this person into the club? But they also had to think about what impact letting that person in would have on their existing members. Because there were also some people who were like, oh, I heard they were letting farmers in, so I'm resigning from this club. So it's all just this really funky social class dance.
Right. It sounds like so much fun.
It sounds exhausting is what it sounds like.
Sounds like just a pure delight. I bet all these people were super chill.
Yeah. And like we have that, I mean, today in our country club system, but like yeah. I don't know enough about it. But the British people who wanted to keep their clubs restricted to other Brits argued that they were a small minority in India. They worked long hours every day alongside Indians. And at the end of the day, they needed a place to go where they could relax with their own kind and feel free to say whatever they wanted without being judged, aka be racist.
You know where a great place to do that is back in your home country.
Yeah, like you don't
just go away.
You don't want to be with Indian people. Maybe you shouldn't have like conquered just, it in a horrible way.
Why don't you kind of leave them to their own devices? They didn't ask you to come here.
Yeah. Yeah, and that reasoning went largely unspoken, but was understood. And in fact, most clubs did not feel the need to explicitly state that they were open only to British members. It just kind of was understood.
It was just known.
Yes. Okay. Which is still segregation. Like,
right. Yeah.
So yeah, that was largely unspoken, but most clubs did not have Indian members before World War I. There kind of was an increase in Indian members, but the majority of that, I think, happened post-Indian independence.
Okay.
And it is fun because there is one example of a really famous, they're called like the aristocratic clubs because they were like one of the original glitzy, glammy clubs before like clubs were in the fashion everywhere. It ended up falling into obscurity because it resisted opening its doors to Indian members until 1959, at which point its own membership had diminished so much. They were like, ugh, I guess we need to let Indian people join. And then all the Indians around were like, yeah, we already joined other clubs.
We joined, yeah, they were too late on the uptake.
So they're gone now.
That's what you get.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to the World Wars. So between the World Wars, many clubs relaxed their membership rules to include Indian members because more and more Indians were joining the various military services. And they kind of, they weren't just military clubs, but a lot of, obviously, the British people who were in them were members of the military. And it should also be noted that some British officials were fighting for the admission of Indians to clubs long before 1939. Because we gotta give props to the, you know, the individuals who weren't complete racist jerk faces.
Yep.
These officers argued that the segregation of clubs was unfair and hurtful, but it was also damaging to British rule. Yeah, because it isolated British members from the locals and also fed resentment on the part of, quote, educated, unquote, Indians who had fully embraced British culture and could quote Shakespeare, but found themselves unwelcome in clubs. Educated, of course, being in quotations because it's like the British education.
Right, yeah.
What matters to the British as far as like you can now speak to me because you know Shakespeare.
Yeah, so there's a particular kind of Indian person who they're,
Yeah, so like still not great. And then there was also this rise in what's called a mixed club that was open to both white British people and Indians. And one of those mixed clubs was the Willingdon Sports Club, which opened its doors in Bombay in 1917 after the Bombay governor raised funding from both British residents and Indian princes. And so he kind of paved the way. That was Governor Willingdon. He named his club after him, which is fine. But after this, other viceroys and governors made it a point to frequent mixed clubs, which helped them gain traction and popularity in the 20th century. So that's kind of cool that, like, that became a trend, and so that helped. And then also probably just made the fact that, like, these older antiquated clubs digging in their heels and being like, no. Yeah, no wonder that one didn't do well.
Fell by the wayside.
I mean, there are other ones, like there's one in Delhi that's huge that's been around since like the 1880s or something that is still going strong. But anyway, yes, today the etiquette and dress rules of existing clubs are the same as they have been since British rule. Entry into certain clubs brings with it prestige, as does being a club committee member, and that is why people fight fiercely in club elections. I did like having that context for the film.
Yep.
And even recognizing these clubs as a lingering relic of colonial rule, people sign up for decades-long waiting lists to get into them and continue to flock there.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it certainly feels like there's some truth to a lot of the club dynamics that we're seeing play out.
Yeah. So I just liked kind of having that. I didn't really learn anything that was unexpected, but I guess confirming assumptions I was making in watching the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's good to do. Good to be aware of.
Yes. Yeah. And I also have, it's not really like a research segment, but it doesn't belong in Bollywood news, but I want to talk about it.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about and put a plug in for Dev Patel's new movie, Monkey Man.
Uh-huh.
Because I went and I saw it and I really, really enjoyed it. But it's not a Bollywood film. There is, I'd say a quarter of it is in Hindi.
Okay, that's cool.
So definitely Hindi language. So I won't give any spoilers or anything, but I was blown away by it. First, it's a good action flick. Like, everyone was just like, oh, it's like India's answer to John Wick. And I'm like, well, it's not. But what bothers...
India doesn't have to answer to anyone, including John Wick.
Correct. But... and also, yes, Dev Patel is, like, British Indian. But we could also just say it's Dev Patel doing his directorial debut in this movie. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have
to be. And also, I had just assumed that this was not a movie made by an Indian production company.
Right.
I don't think you can say that
it's India's, like, right, exactly.
Viewers can say that it's India's, because it's not.
Yeah. But the reason I'm bringing it up here is because of the issues that it exposes and that it looks at. So again, mm-hmm. solid action flick. I really like the action. People complain about the shakiness of the camera work. Whatever. I'm not here to talk about that. It is really looking at, like, the rise of Hindu nationalism. And it is also looking at the violence being committed against people who fall outside of, well, I would say Western gender norms, because India does have the third gender, and there's a very, very long history of, like, non-conformity to the gender binary. But there's a lot of, like, trans representation in Monkey Man. Mm. There is, like, a fighting force of trans and non-binary people. That's awesome. Cool. Like, if you ever just wanted to see a bunch of people just beat up a bunch of other people, it's great.
Great.
In a good way. I think it's also really interesting that it was originally picked up by Netflix to distribute, because this movie was made, like, in 2019.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize
So Dev Patel finished it, and Netflix had been on board to distribute it, and then they watched it, and they were like, oh, we're not releasing that.
Oh.
Because it features a fictional far-right Hindu nationalist character who ends up kind of being, like, an antagonist.
Okay.
So it's purposely taking a hard look and a criticizing look at Hindu nationalism. And Netflix was like, India's kind of a huge market for us, so we're not doing
that. We're not going to touch that.
And that's when then Jordan Peele's production company came in and bought it. And decided to do a theatrical release.
I didn't realize that he was a producer.
Oh, so Jordan Peele, is a producer of it, which is also, like, okay, great.
I was thinking before you brought that up how interested I would be to find out what Indian people's reaction was to the film.
Yeah, it is intentionally showcasing issues of the caste system, Hindu nationalism, violence against women, and police brutality pretty openly in the background of this action flick. And so India's censor board has still not approved it, and it's unclear if and when Monkey Man will be released in India.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's just really interesting. I just have, like, two quotes from Dev Patel. But so Monkey Man refers to the deity Hanuman, who the main character is inspired by. But Dev Patel said about the role religion plays in the film, "We're talking about religion and how religion can weaponize a large mass of people, and it can be used to a horrible extent to inflict violence. At the same time, it can be such a beautiful teacher. The iconographies, the stories, the morals of right and wrong and courage, there's this duality to it." So I like that, his story, it's about religion inspiring and also being weaponized, but he does it in a really good way. And also, because International Transgender Day of Visibility was, like, fairly recently on March 31st, it just really hit me, the trans representation. And to that note, Dev Patel said that this is an anthem for the underdogs, the voiceless, and the marginalized. And that's why he included representation of the Hijra community, the third gender in India. And he said, "We should be fighting for, not against. For me, it has become rigid over time. When you look at the old carvings in these temples in India, the freedom, the sexuality, all of it, the philosophy was so ahead of its time. I wanted to dive into it and make that the lore of the film."
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And I was watching it and I was like, I see you. And then to hear him actually speak about it and to confirm that, that was all intentional. It is a really worthwhile film to watch.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks so much for sharing. I do hope to see it someday.
Yeah, so Bollywood news.
My only thing for news was just wanting to mention that Fighter, like, beat all of the records that Animal had recently broken on Netflix.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say it beat the records of, like, Pathaan and, like, Jawan. And I was like, what? But no, okay.
Well, I don't know. It streaming-wise might have done better than those, because what I was reading was, like, all the Animal had, like, broken all these records, and then Fighter just immediately came in and was like, nope. These are ours now. And then the article was like, it's Anil Kapoor's world and we're all just living in it. That's not what they said, but that was my takeaway.
I would love to live in Anil Kapoor's world, let's be honest. Yes. I love that for a Fighter, though. And we're going to contribute to those numbers pretty soon.
Soon, but not immediately.
Soon, but not yet. We'll keep you on your toes. Yeah. That's great, though. I'm so excited to watch it.
I know, me too.
Yeah. I don't have any other Bollywood news. Pluggables. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. Do what you do. And you can also subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You can leave a rating, leave a review, or not. We're just happy to have you listening, so thank you.
Always. We love having you here, and we would love it too if you followed us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. We add the songs from the movies that we love to those playlists, the songs that we love from the movies that we love. We link those in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts on Tuesdays. I have been thinking about trying to come up with some maybe more fun stuff to do with those, so if you haven't previously looked at them, that's fair. It's kind of a silly thing that we do, but we think it's fun. I am going to try to maybe zhuzh it up a little, maybe make it a little spicier, so that's a little tease for people to come and join us over there.
Spice, though. I like that.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
That'll be fun. We'll see what happens.
Hey.
Hey. Next week, we will be watching my quote-unquote birthday movie.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday.
Thank you. My birthday's 420. Blaze it.
Blaze it.
And I have chosen Highway.
Yeah.
Yes. That sad, sad, sweet, kind of violent film starring Randy Pouda and Alia Bhatt. Hi, everyone. This is Katie. I am doing a little post-recording message to say that Kim and I really, really wanted to watch Highway as my birthday movie and as the film that we're discussing next week, but unfortunately we couldn't find it anywhere, not even to pay for it, which is a real bummer, but we will push that down the road until a time when we can find it and watch it. Really looking forward to that. So instead, next week we will be watching Fighter. It's written and directed by Siddhartha Nand. You know how much we love him. It's going to be a really fun time, so I'm still looking forward to it. Very different vibe from Highway. You can find it on Netflix. And the Netflix synopsis is, he is confident, fearless, and a bit of a rebel. But as he embarks on a lethal military mission, will his daredevilry save lives or end in doom? Now, I've never heard the term daredevilry, but this sounds awesome. Don't know who he is. Can only imagine it's referring to Hrithik. We'll just have to watch and find out. So watch Fighter. Enjoy it. I anticipate there's going to be some awesome fighting scenes. And we will talk about it next week. And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
We sure do.